Elizabeth Elliot says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." She says, "I would much rather use the energy and the time that I have and direct it towards knowing God, worshiping God, loving God, finding out who He is, and daily praying that He will make me much more like Himself." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about the difference between men and women. I came across a fascinating article in the magazine Discover several years ago, describing some of the differences in the brains of men and women. Now, there are certain people today who would absolutely vigorously and vehemently deny that there could possibly be any fundamental difference between the brains of men and women. But I didn't make this up. I got it straight out of a scientific magazine called Discover. You can check it out in the April 1981 issue if you want to. It said that there are differences in both behavior and intellect between men and women, which are partially rooted in the structure of the brain. Because the male brain is virilized by testosterone, men excel, the article said, in spatial reasoning, athletics, mathematics, and aggression. Now, the article did not go on to say, and women are inferior in the following ways. The article said, women excel in intuition, in language, in the right ear and eye being more sensitive than those of men. That hormones imprint a code on the brain, which later activates the code. And then it spoke about male canaries. It seems to me I had heard before that it's only the male canary that sings, but the article explained that the male canary has large cell clusters on the brain that control song. And if a female canary is injected with masculine hormones, her clusters will grow and she will learn to sing. The size of the clusters determines the size of the song repertoire. Now, who do you suppose designed all that? There isn't any question in my mind that it was God, the same one who created the world, the same one who designed those wonderful things that my husband and I were privileged to see when we visited the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, a coral reef that covers, are you ready for this, 250,000 square miles. The difference between men and women. Do we really need to discuss the difference between men and women? We all know what the difference is, don't we? And I remember how different my father's look and feel and smell was from my mother. I loved the look and feel and smell of both of them, but they were very different creatures. In my last talk, we thought a little bit about God's creating the woman for the man. And when God brought Eve to Adam, remember, he didn't bring Adam to Eve, Adam recognized immediately that this person was very much like him, far more like him than the aardvark or the zebra. And yet, there was a glorious distinction, a difference. And he recognized her as woman. He gave her a name. But we've been hearing that we should be persons. We talk about personhood rather than womanhood and manhood. My niece goes to Harvard University, and I could hardly believe my ears when she told me that they have a fresh person class in the university. Well, I'm not sure that this is a good idea at all. I'm quite sure it's not a very helpful idea. I don't think it's necessary. I don't really think it's important. And I'm quite sure that it's not God's idea. Because it was God's idea that there be a radical distinction between men and women. The woman was created for the man. You can read that in Genesis 2. If you miss it in Genesis 2, you can find it in 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul states very clearly, the woman was made for the man, not man for the woman. We also find in Genesis 2 that the woman was made from the man. You remember that Adam was made out of dust. I remember speaking to a group of small children in Texas. So when I had finished talking to them about some of God's created work, the teacher said, now, what did God make Adam out of? And the little boy said, dirt. And she said, good. And what did he do next? And the little boy said, he blowed sense into him. God made Adam out of the dust, and then he made the woman, not out of the dust, but out of one of Adam's bones. You remember that beautiful part of the story where God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep and took out of his side a rib, and out of that rib he fashioned this helper, this companion, this creature precisely designed to meet the particular kind of need that God saw in Adam. She was made for him. She was made from him. She was brought to him. And she was named by him. And the difference between men and women, I think, is defined in those four things, but that's not by any means all. Let's take a look, for example, at the visible, physical distinctions between men and women. There are a good many distinctions. I never realized until I heard a scientist mention this point that one reason that women look awkward throwing balls is because their arms are different from men. They're hung differently. A woman's arms are made to cradle a baby. And the reason that a man sometimes looks awkward trying to cradle a baby is because his arms are made for hurling spears or doing heavy labor or shooting bows and arrows or whatever. So there are a number of physical distinctions besides the very obvious reproductive equipment with which each one of us is born. If you look at the body of a man, you see strength, you see the ability to protect, to do heavy labor, and thereby to provide for a wife and children. And you see that he is clearly made to be an initiator. You look at the body of a woman, what do you see? You see a body created for receiving, for nurturing, for bearing, for carrying. We are made to be cherished. So if that was all the data we had, we could learn quite a bit just from that. As a Christian, I look not just at the physical things around me, but I always look beyond those physical things to the one who made them, as I did when I was snorkeling around in the Great Barrier Reef. I look straight into the face of a purple and yellow fish who is blowing bubbles and looking at me with the most calm and unflinching stare. And I think, the same one that made that face made mine. The same one that put the moon up there put this reef down here under this water. He's in charge. He's the one that made men and women. He's the one who loves me. It's his arms that are everlasting, that are underneath me every minute of every hour of every day. When I'm working in my kitchen, when I'm flying in a plane, when I'm sitting in front of a microphone, when I'm talking to a large crowd of people, when I'm sitting perhaps at my desk with my computer humming away trying to work on a book, or, and don't forget this part, when I'm cleaning the toilet. God is there. He's my Lord. He's my Master. I belong to Him. I don't have to worry about who I am. I have to remember whose. And He's the one who made me. He's the one who created this glorious distinction between men and women. I remember my sudden, keen, new awareness of what masculinity was all about when I first fell in love. I fell in love back in my college days with a young man on the campus. I realized that I was very foolish to fall in love with a man like Jim Elliot. He was a very popular man. We used to call him a BMOC, a big man on campus, or a BTO, a big time operator. I was nothing but a TWO, a teeny weeny operator. And I thought really there wasn't a chance in the world that Jim Elliot was ever going to look at me twice. But the day came when I found out that he not only had looked at me twice, but he was actually in love with me, and he told me so. And my feelings of love for him were enormously increased upon that revelation. And in the following days, whenever we were together, which we were as much as we could be in those last weeks of school when we had examinations and papers and I was about to graduate, we would walk together, we would sit together and talk together. And I was keenly aware that here was a totally different kind of person. His masculinity almost overwhelmed me at times. It gave me a sense of awe. It gave me a sense, which was new to me, of a desire to be his, to belong to him.
As Elizabeth Elliot has said, anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. She's been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.